Thank you very much for having this teaching, okay, and coming, okay. I'm sorry it's so chilly, so wrap up. It keeps you awake, though. Sabuni asked what question. He said, you know, if we're going to be bodhisattvas, then how are we supposed to live, how are we supposed to practice, and how are we supposed to sing, okay? And then the sutra kicks off, you know, the Buddha gives his answer, and then you get into the whole meat of the sutra. Why? Because Lord Buddha says, well, first of all, a bodhisattva should see to themselves that they should free every living being, okay? And then there goes through all these different types of beings, which we'll talk a little bit about, but it's not the main point. And then at the end he says, after they've finished liberating them, they should realize that they don't exist. Those beings don't. The beings that they liberated don't exist, and nobody got liberated. Okay? And then Subhuti says, why do you say that? You know, and he says, because if a bodhisattva thought that what they call a sentient being or a living being was a living being, we couldn't call them a bodhisattva. Okay? So that's how, I'll say the answer again, okay? So, Buddha, what are we supposed to do if we want to be a bodhisattva? He says, get bodhicitta, you know, get the desire to free all living beings. And then they say, but keep in mind that after you liberate them all, nobody got liberated, okay? And that's Buddha's answer. And then, Subhuti's like, well, what do you mean by that? He says, well, because if they thought of people as people, they wouldn't be bodhisattvas, okay? If they thought of people as people, they wouldn't be bodhisattvas, okay? And that's, we have to cover this whole answer this evening, okay? I think the first thing to talk about is the idea of a bodhisattva and what it means, and I think it's a much abused word. It's like, it seems to me easier to understand an emptiness, but I think the idea is abused, you know? You're supposed to try to be a bodhisattva. You're supposed to try to get bodhicitta. And what are they? What do they mean? What does it mean to be a bodhisattva? What does a bodhisattva do, and how do you get to be a bodhisattva, okay? And I always think it's like, I think everybody in the world has, His Holiness is always talking about people's basic nature is one of kindness or something like that. I think it's a basic human desire. Deep down inside, everybody would like to be a bodhisattva, you know, like, and I think the people who would want to be a bodhisattva the most have the most trouble acting like one, maybe. But you have this, I think deep down, everybody remembers their childhood and stories about Jesus, or for me it was Albert Schweitzer and Gandhi, or you hear about Mother Teresa or something like that, and you have this deep, Abraham Lincoln. You have this deep thing inside you that says, I'd like to be like that, you know? And then as you get older, you decide it's not really practical, you know? You couldn't really do it, you know what I mean? Like, you can maybe be a good person or a reasonably good person, but Gandhi or Mother Teresa or something like that, I don't have time, you know what I mean? I think, no, there's not a certain point in life. I don't think it's a conscious thing, you know. I don't think you sit down and say, okay, I give up. I'll never be a Mother Teresa, you know. But I think everybody has this, deep down inside, if I told you you've got a good shot at being like Jesus or Gandhi or something like that, then I think you would, you'd try, you know. You'd be interested in trying. And the neat thing is that if you understand emptiness, it's easier to be a bodhisattva. And probably it's very difficult to be a bodhisattva if you don't understand emptiness. That's why the direct experience of bodhicitta can happen just after, for example, the direct perception of emptiness, okay? They often are occurring on the same day, even, okay? Real bodhicitta, to be a real bodhisattva, is extremely difficult, you know? It's very rare that someone actually gets bodhicitta. I hear all this thing, you know, I met Lama so-and-so, they're a real bodhisattva, you know. And he said, why? And he said, oh, you know, he had only one cup of tea and he gave me the one. You know, you know, people, is it just kindness, you know? Is it just that does bodhisattva mean a person who is extraordinarily kind or nice? You know, a person who never gets upset is a bodhisattva. Or a person who can give up their last cup of tea is a bodhisattva. What makes you a bodhisattva? You see what I mean? I'd like to do the scriptural definition first, okay? And then we'll talk about it. And I think a lot of us, you have to examine your idea of what does bodhisattva mean. You know, it doesn't just mean you're a very, very nice guy. Or is it something beyond that? You see what I mean? And I think you have to know the definition, okay? You have to know the technical explanation of what a bodhisattva is. I like to debate my students and embarrass them in public. So, who we got here? I did you last time. Where's Heinberg? Huh? Yeah. Some people tell each other, maybe I should. Nobody can give me a definition of bodhisattva. She's a Baba dude. She's, yeah, that's what you think. Some people tell each other, you're a You tell me somebody could give me a definition of bodhisattva? Sure. Yeah, sure. Where'd you get that from? Sounds nice. Perkela in Tibetan, please. Jetun Jambi. Sui in Beecha. Jetun Jambi. Sui in Beecha. Yimbaka. You tell me my trail said that? Lord Matra? Bah, Dale says, yeah, you heard me right. And I was like, so, that's a good way to learn Tibetan, by the way. I mean, you know, if you're struggling to learn Tibetan, go debate for a couple of days, and the thing is, you say, wouldst thou have a definition of bodhicitta? And you say, yeah, I got one. And you learn to speak modern Tibetan and ancient Tibetan at the same time, and it's really good. It's really cool. Anyway, we'll write the definition according to where I go, in here. This is my choice definition, which, you know, it's a little bit long, but I think it's worth it, okay? To know what a bodhisattva really is, okay? My head or the body? I don't know. You want to try to... I'll read it out for you. Semke? Semkye, Pani, water, Pani, Shendun, Shendun, Chir, Chir, Yangdak, Yangdak, Zokpe, Dzok, Pay, Jangchub, Jang. CHUB, the deal. Okay. This is from the Ornament of Realizations, the Lintel Gen, and thank you. Let me try. Is that better for you guys? Easier.
We can't move the board. Where's Ben? Can we move the board?
How about for the next class? I'll read them out for this class, and then we'll try to figure this out. Okay.
We're going to put the light back on. We'll try and work out something later, but right now.
Yeah, I'll read them out for today. Okay. This is from the Ornament of Realizations, written down by his secretary, Master Asanga. Okay. Say, Semke. Everybody, it's very, very holy words. This is my Charles explanation of what bodhicitta is. Semke, Pani, Shendun, Chir, Yamba, Dzogpe, Changchun, De. Okay, great. Semke means bodhicitta. It's the Tibetan word for bodhicitta. Okay, Semke. Sem means mind, and ke means to develop it in your own heart. Okay. And it means the wish, okay? Semke Pani means that wish is defined as, okay? Ni means is to find us. Shenbin Chiyom is others. Okay. Yang Dab Zok Be means perfect and total. Perfect and total. Chang Chu means Buddhahood, enlightenment. And Du means to want to reach that. Okay? So I'll translate it in plain English. Bodhicitta is defined as the wish to reach perfect and total enlightenment for the sake of others. Okay? And that's the definition of bodhicitta. And the moment you get real bodhicitta, you become a bodhisattva. That's what a bodhisattva is, okay? So really, when you define bodhicitta, you define bodhisattva, okay? So you have to understand that in the teaching on the five paths and the five spiritual milestones of your life, what's number three? See, you have to guess directly, okay? All right? Number one happens to be getting fed up with this life. Okay? Like, you can't even enter the first Buddhist path unless you're fed up with the problems of this life. Now, you wouldn't be sitting here in Bulgaria with diarrhea and freezing if you didn't have a little bit of that. Okay? No, really. To get here, you probably have that, you know? I always say that a good Buddhist has to have one good disaster in their life, you know? Like, that's what got you here. Like, you meet people, they seem normal. They seem happy, and then you question them for, you know, half an hour, and you find out that they watched their best friend fall out a window on the fifth floor or something like that. You know, and you say, aha, now I understand why he's a Buddhist. You see what I mean? And normally you have to see some kind of real suffering, and then you start to think, okay? And that's the first Buddhist level called Tsogla, is when you figure out that there's a problem here, okay? And that's path of preparation, okay? Now, when you do that for yourself, you're on a Hinayana path of preparation. When you do it, when you think about your own problems and say, oh, other people must be having the same problems I have, then you've got, you know, bodhicitta, and that's the first level of the Mahayana path. So, on the five paths of the Mahayana track, the big track, you know, when you can be fed up with life, or you see that there's a problem with life. I mean, for me, it was, I have six people in our family. It was four brothers and two parents. And then three of them died in 1 year. And then, you know, I didn't freak out, and I didn't go to a mental hospital or anything, but I went to Dharamsala. And, well, I tried to figure out what was going on, because I grew up a Christian, I was very happy as a Christian, but it didn't explain what happened, you know. And I love Christianity, I love Jesus' words, I'm really into it, but it didn't answer what was going on, you know. So that was my event, you know. So just to look at other people and to realize that they have no future at all. There's no hope for anybody here. If you don't get this stuff straight during this week or on some other occasion, there's no hope. You know, what you got to look forward to is to get old, lose everything you're working for, work like a dog to collect a... all these things, you know, lose them, die, and then all this hard work that people fool themselves into doing is just wasted. Your kids will spend all that stuff in 6 months, you know. You know that, but you still do it, you know what I mean? And there's no hope, you know, you will get old. And you will just get, you know, gradually older and older and more ugly, and more stupid. And then you won't be able to meditate, and then you'll die. And then there'll be your money, they'll dispose of that quickly. Then there'll be your memory, and that'll go a little farther. And then there'll be your last picture in someone's drawer, and they'll say, well, who was that? And say, I don't remember. And they'll throw it out. No, that's all you have to look forward to. You know, that's the, you laugh, you know, sooner or later, 1 month, 1 year, 5 years, there's no other way. There's nothing else to do here, you know. Actually, it's pretty boring, and on top of that, it's suffering. You know, life's got this dual problem. You know, if you really have enough to eat and wear, then it's just boring. And then, secondly, you have to get old and die and lose everything that you're trying to do, you know, and that's where you are. So the day that you just decide that that's no fun, I mean, for me, it's a dual thing. I mean, to me, I would want to get a double thing. I would want to get some kind of mystical life, you know. I wouldn't want to have a boring life, you know. And then secondly, I would want to not get old and die, and I'd want to teach other people how to do that. So really, the basis of this is just to realize what's happening with other people and yourself, that there's no hope, you know. Really, there's no hope. You have your interests. We're doing three-year retreat. We're cleaning out our apartments. We're throwing out everything. It's really like dying, you know. Like, we went to level one, which was, you know, all the obvious junk. And then we went through, it was still too much to take to Arizona to fit in a yurt. And then we threw out level two, which was like all the kind of stuff we kind of liked. And then it was down to like really neat stuff and high school girlfriends' pictures and stuff. And then people are like, okay, gotta throw it out. And it's hard, you know. And then finally at the end, you just realize you're not anything. There's nothing there. There's nothing worth keeping. You know, you don't have anything to look forward to. If you don't throw it out, someone else is going to throw it out for you after you die. And that's the story of your life. And it's just, how long is it going to last before it ends, you know. And on the other hand, the idea that maybe you could reach some kind of tantric enlightenment, you could be like Tara, the day wouldn't be boring, it would be like exciting all day, saving people's lives, you know, and then, and, you know, your body would change in this light body, and that you could do that in this lifetime before you die, is, to me, getting rid of the boring part is more interesting than the suffering part even, you know what I mean, to have like that kind of thing happen to you, and to have a decent chance of pulling it off in this lifetime is something really sexy, you know, exciting for me. And that's the idea, is that face what your life is and then get excited about what you could do with it. You know what I mean? It's like this huge, great material for, because, don't be satisfied with crap, you know? Don't be satisfied with, okay, a little more food, a little more money, or a little more people know your name or something like that, you know? To go for the big time, you know, like Tara, Manjushri, something like that, you know what I mean? Really. And, you know, like that. So what is that like? Yandam Dzogchen Choshu Du means, yeah, you would have a body. I don't like to, like, dwell on the hell realms and stuff like that. I'd much rather say, look, you play your cards right, you'll have this body that's made of light, and you can do it in this lifetime. And I think what's interesting to say is that many, many, many people have done it before. People around you who look normal to you are not. They've already finished doing it, and they're sitting around, and because of your karma, which we'll explain, you can't recognize them, but they recognize themselves. So they could be sitting in this audience right here and next to you, and you don't recognize who they are. Because, and we'll explain why, it's because of their emptiness, okay? But in the meantime, just get excited about it. You could do it, you know what I mean? And then you can teach other people to do it, and that's bodhicitta, okay? It's not, this guy is a nice guy, or this guy gives away a lot of money, or this person always takes the last tea, or something like that. This person has a vision of changing their body and mind into a totally pure, holy, sacred being of light, and turning other people on how to do it, you know what I mean? And that's bodhicitta. I mean, it's really a big thing. It's not like some little, you know, I mean, of course they would still give away their last tea, you know, but probably they'd go out and buy some more tea and make sure everybody had tea. You see, I mean, it's more of a, that's more how they operate, you know what I mean? So, it has a dual focus. It's called Sanyudandambi law, means the state of mind with two focuses. One is, I want to get enlightened myself so I can help other people. And I think people, you know, in America or in the Christian tradition, Judeo-Christian background, you're almost like, if I don't suffer, then I'm not a really good person. You know what I mean? The idea in Buddhism is quite different. Okay, raise your right hand. I promise to reach total ecstasy to help our other people. Okay? You know, no, really. You don't have to get beaten up or stabbed or, you know, anything like that. No, really. That's your promise? Yamba Dzogchen Chanchu do. I will reach total ecstasy, bliss, of a holy enlightened being's body, which you can do because of emptiness. So that I can teach other people how to do it. Just show them how to do it. Because, you know, what's the use of going around telling people how to do it if you can't do it? If you haven't done it? Or, you know, what's the point? You know, you're going to say, I'm going to teach you tantra. And they say, well, did you do it yourself? Well, not yet, but... You know. It's kind of funny. Anyway, so that's the idea, okay? That's the idea. That's the real meaning of bodhicitta, okay? It's not just Mr. Nice Guy. Of course they'll act nice, they do nice things for people. But it's this vision of, especially if you understand emptiness, and tonight we're going to talk about the connection between emptiness and bodhisattvas. If you understand the connection between emptiness and bodhisattvas, then you really are doing bodhicitta. Then you really have bodhicitta. See what I mean? That's bodhicitta, you know? It's the vision to want to become an enlightened being and to understand why you can in this lifetime, and then in the back of your mind all the time is, and I could turn other people onto that. And what happens in real life when you get bodhicitta, from that moment on, your whole life, every moment of your life is just this party, Dharma party, you know, like you're thinking of 10,000 ways you could help other people, you know. Lama Sopa sitting there and shooting out projects. You know, they say he's got 46 buildings and statues designed for L&B, but they can't pay the rent yet. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? No, like, he's got this vision, you see what I mean? And, and that's the thing. It's a vision of what you could be, and then the excitement about that you could turn other people. You know, when you get closer and closer, then you can start turning other people onto it and showing how. Just show people how to do it, okay? So that's real bodhicitta. Okay, it has two kinds. The first one is munsem, M-U-N-S-E-M. And the second is juksem, J-U-K-S-E-M. Say munsem, juksem. Munsem, juksem. They have all these strange translations like, I don't know, wishing bodhicitta and engaging bodhicitta or something like that. It just means think like a bodhisattva and act like a bodhisattva. Okay? That's all. Munsam means think like a bodhisattva. Juksam means act like a, do what a bodhisattva does. Okay? Act like a bodhisattva. And these are two forms of bodhicitta. When you take bodhisattva vows, according to the old way, Nagarjuna's way, Arya Nagarjuna's ritual, he says, you gotta take a vow for thinking like a bodhisattva, and then maybe a year later we'll let you take a vow for acting like a bodhisattva. You see what I mean? So in the old days, they would take two ceremonies to take these vows, and they were tough on you. You know, they said, you got to do munsam for a year or two. Then I'll let you take juksam, okay? Then you promise to think like a bodhisattva, and then later we'll talk about promising to act like a bodhisattva, okay? So like you would spend a year or 2 years just learning to think about that vision. You know, hey, if you understand emptiness, you can pull that off. This could turn into Manjushri's arm. And then you could teach other people how to do it. Now, is that cool or not? Think about it for a year. Promise to think about it for a year. You know, and that was the commitment. And then the second part of Jigsaw was, okay, here's the 64 bodhisattva vows. And here's all the secondary bodhisattva vows they didn't tell you about, and here's all those other commitments, and, okay? And that was the ceremony. So actually I encourage you to, if you take bodhisattva vows, you know, take it in two pieces. You know, ask the Lama if they can give it to you in two pieces like that, okay? What's the actual method for acting like a bodhisattva?
The book. Okay. Sixth time. I call it sixth time book. I have some students want to call it confession book or bad deed book or something like that. I said, how about rejoicing book or good deed book or something like that. Okay. Some people want to call it tantric and paradise book. Okay. But anyway, your bodhisattva vows are designed. You see, someone says, you should act like a bodhisattva. And then you say, how do I do it? And they say, all these six perfections, you know, which are giving, let's say, morality. I like ethical way of life. Morality reminds me of Billy Graham. So what? Yeah, patience. The art of not getting angry. So, happy about doing good things. Five, meditation. Really the ability to meditate. And then six is wisdom. Okay? So I will say, okay, there's the six. Good luck. See you later. You know, read that in Master Shantideva's book if you have time. You know, it doesn't work as a program. You see what I mean? You need a program. You need, that's like giving somebody a book about diet and not give them a daily program. You see what I mean? It's okay to give them a book about proper eating, but it's much better to say, okay, here's the plan. You're going to eat cauliflower on Monday. Tuesdays you're going to eat radishes. Wednesday is Ben and Jerry's ice cream. Okay. Like that, you know, you gotta have a program. You can't do anything. It's not enough to understand the whole theory. So the idea of Tundruk, six session yoga, it is one of the tantric vows. Okay, I'm gonna break my tantric vows and tell you a tantric vow. Okay? Really. You can't take a higher Anuttara yoga initiation unless you agree to keep this practice. Okay? Frankly, in the Tibetan tradition, as it's being taught now, it's corrupted. It's a little thing that you recite twice a day, not six times a day. I used to do it on the bus for 16 years, going home from work in Perth Amboy. When we passed through Perth Amboy, I would sleep up to Perth Amboy, passing through Perth Amboy, in 1 minute and a half, I would do six session yoga, the cheat way, okay, which is, you know, if you do it fast, you can do it about a minute and a half, and not even think about it once, you know what I mean? That doesn't do anything for your behavior, it doesn't make you a pure person, it doesn't change your mind at all, nothing happens, okay? And if you could read Tibetan, what Pabongka Rinpoche wrote at the end of that one is that I wrote this for retarded people, for senile people, so that they could stay out of the Vajra house and don't use it. You know what I mean? Okay. No, really, I can show it to you, okay? So what is Tundruk? You know, what is... Tundruk means, you know, I used to work in a diamond cutting factory at night with all these, Hasidic, traditional guys, and they'd be cutting diamonds late into the night, and I wasn't required. I dealt in raw diamonds, but I wanted to know how they cut them, you know, so I begged them to teach me. They said, give us $3,000, we'll teach you, you know. I said, okay, you know, and they went in, and still I had to spy on them because they didn't want to show me, but you sit there, and they cut all night, late into the night. I said, Shlomo, why do you stay here all night? Aren't you worried? He says, that's why I stay here. You know, but something very interesting. They can have this big stone on the wheel. They can have like a 12-carat stone. This is $100,000 on the wheel. And you have to keep, you flip it, you hold this glass here, and you go, psh, 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 and you keep checking it. So they put the stone on the wheel, and they go in the corner and do their prayers very religiously. You know, six times a day, they go in the corner, and they do their prayers. You know. And they don't care, because it's in the Diamond Dealers Club in New York, which is like this incredibly, the tables are covered with diamonds. A quarter of the area is given for prayer, for your daily prayer. You go into the special door, and you close yourself up, and you do your prayers, you know. And that's the way it's supposed to be. Like six times a day, every 2 hours, 2.5 hours, you stop. Okay? You stop that stuff that doesn't mean anything. Okay, and for 2 minutes you do something meaningful. You know what I mean? Then go back to 4 hours of meaningless stuff. You know what I mean? And that's checking your vows. So the way to make this into a program was, it was taught by Vajradhara, Lord Buddha in his tantric form. And he said, keep a book, you know, write your vows down, know what your vows are, and then every 2 hours or so, stop, go in the corner, you know, look at your vows, and decide, did I do that today or not, you know, how am I doing on this vow today, okay? And that's how to do the six perfections. I mean, it's good to talk about the six perfections, you go hear some lama teach it, you go home very inspired, and you forget about it in 3 days. This is an actual method. Your bodhisattva vows are designed according to the six perfections. They're laid out in the six perfections. You have to see the structure. Somebody has to teach it to you. ACI course number 7. Okay, there's a beautiful structure. Those vows are how to follow the six perfections all day long, you know, and that gets you enlightened, okay? So you got to do that, okay? I'm going to show you how to do the book. We'll pass them out during the... What do you know? During the break. We'll give them to you during the break, okay? Yeah. And this is just a crash course, because you've got to... I'll ask you to keep it from tonight, okay? At least for the next 5 days. Then you can just throw it out. It's a free notebook. You can use the rest for, you know, drawing or whatever you want, okay? Do you have vows, too? We'll give you the vows, too, okay? Bodhisattva vows are not secret, okay? Monk's vows are not allowed to be taught to people who don't have those vows yet, who haven't become ordained yet, and then tantric vows you can't teach to people before they take them. But Bodhisattva vows, you're encouraged to learn them before you take them, okay? So whether you have them or not, we'll give you a list of them, okay? And if you look at the book, if you open up the book like that, you want to hand them out? Let's do it, okay? You know, until everybody has their book, I'm going to do one more thing, okay? I just wrote a new word on the board. For you guys over there, it's K-U-N-D-Z-O-B. K-U-N-D-Z-O-B. Semkye. S-E-M-K-Y-E. S-E-M-K-Y-E. If you already have a book, you might want to let somebody else have it. Okay. Say, Kunzo? More. Kunzo? Senge. Kunzo? Senge. This is a word used to describe those two kinds of bodhicitta I just wrote up there. Okay? I wrote up there how to think like a bodhisattva and how to act like a bodhisattva. Those are both called Kunzo Senge. Together, they are known as Kunzo Senge. Kunzo Senge means fake bodhicitta. And I'm not kidding, okay? Fake bodhicitta. Thinking like a bodhisattva and acting like a bodhisattva are both called, together, their technical name is fake bodhicitta, okay? Deceptive bodhicitta, okay? That implies that there's a real one. Right. Okay, please say loud, okay? This is very cool. Dindam? Dindam? Senke. Dindam? Senke. Dindam is ultimate bodhicitta, okay? Dindam is ultimate. Senke means bodhicitta. That kind of bodhicitta, which is like ultimate compassion, you know, which is what? The vision that you could become a tantric deity before you die, and teach other people how to do it. Period. Okay? That vision is called fake bodhicitta. Okay? Why is it called fake or deceptive bodhicitta? It's because it's focused on people as normal things. Okay? It's focused on people as normal things. It implies that you're not fully understanding their emptiness. While you look at them and say, I'd love to come to you in 2 years and turn you on to how to become a tantric deity like I did 6 months ago. You see what I mean? When you look at that book, you say, Well, and you say, you know, I'd really like to, you know, I'd like to show you how to do that, you know. And if you see him the wrong way, you see, if you don't understand his emptiness, then that's what the kunzo means. That's what the fake means. It means you don't really get it, and you won't be able to help him either. Okay? If you don't understand their emptiness, then don't call yourself a bodhisattva. Sound familiar? That's what Lord Buddha just got through saying. Oh, you're going to save all living beings? Yeah. And you're going to finish saving them? Yeah. And when you finish, is there anybody you saved? I guess. No way. You think like that? You're no bodhisattva. Okay? That's the exchange that's going on here with Subhuti. You know, he's saying, if you think you're saving somebody, you're no bodhisattva. Okay, that's just part of Kunzo Sangye. So Kunzo Sangye, this is a good thing. Okay, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. This is ultimate compassion. But it's not... It's focusing on people as ordinary reality, normal reality, which is fake. Okay? That's why we call it fake. It's focusing on people and not understanding them. Okay? Now, Dingman Sangye gas. Ultimate bodhicitta. Okay? It is seeing emptiness. By the way, this is a code word that has nothing to do with compassion. It's the direct perception of emptiness. It's that thing we started to talk about this afternoon. Okay? It's that 20 minutes in deep meditation that you commune with ultimate reality. And we call that ultimate bodhicitta. Does it mean you have love in your heart? No, because Hinayana people can, you know, people who don't have bodhicitta can have Dindam Sankhya. Okay? People who have not entered the Mahayana path and who have no interest in saving other beings. Okay, I'm not talking Sri Lankan versus Tibetan. I'm talking the attitude. And there's lots of Tibetans with the attitude of a Hinayana, and there's lots of Sri Lankans with the attitude of a Mahayana. We're talking attitude here, not traditions, okay? We're talking... Ultimate means that you're looking at people and you're understanding their emptiness at the same time, and you want to save them. You can see ultimate reality before you have any desire to save other people. You see what I mean? On a Hinayana track. On a lower track. Okay? On a track that's not thinking about other people yet. You can see emptiness. Okay? There was a big debate about it in Tibet. There was a big debate about it in Buddhism. A couple of your bodhisattva vows say that you're not supposed to think like that. But if a person trained themselves properly, they could see emptiness without getting bodhicitta. And that's true. Okay? They can have ultimate bodhicitta without having any bodhicitta. How's that? Okay? They can have the direct perception of emptiness without having any ultimate love yet. Okay? Of course it's much better to do them both together. Okay? You want to try to do them both together. Together they are called what? any one of you, 3, 4, 5. Shechin Gitseni Shaki, maybe answer. Nobody give me the definition of the perfection of wisdom. What is it? Means yeah, what? Shut. She said the direct perception of emptiness with bodhicitta in your heart. Yeah, thank you, Sime Gone Tony. It's a direct perception of emptiness with thoughts of bodhicitta in your heart. Permeated with bodhicitta. Yimaka! Imbued. So, some Shinbin Chi Yimaka. So it's focusing on other beings and wishing they could turn them on to tantric enlightenment. Yimaka. No. So it's not focused on other people. She said you can't perceive emptiness directly and see other people at the same time. I said, you're right. So it can't be focused on other people, right? It's not for other people. Not focused on other people. You can't see other people at that time. How can you be focused on other people?
Permeate your mind.
You copy the Bible, Holy Scriptures. Well, anyway, it's not Wintun Utopa. It's not direct perception. Just don't eat up it. It's not winsome. It's not directly. Okay. What it means is an understanding of emptiness imbued with, you know, when her mind is full of bodhicitta, that's the perfection of wisdom. That's Shakyamuni. That's Prajnaparamita. Okay. You understand emptiness, and you want to save everybody and turn them on to tantric enlightenment. That's the perfection of wisdom. Okay, that's Prajnaparamita. Okay. So if you have these two together, then you got perfection and wisdom. Okay. The first one being ultimate love for other people. What's ultimate love? Want to give them money, house, tea, food? No. Want to turn them on to a body that doesn't get old and a life that's not boring. Okay. And then secondly, and understands their emptiness. Because if you don't, you're no bodhisattva. Okay? Dhamma, transcend, mahimbeyesha. So anyone who doesn't understand emptiness is not a bodhisattva. What do you think? Duh. So if you don't understand emptiness, you can't be a bodhisattva, right? Nimbata. Duh. Take them so long. Take a person on the first level of the Mahayana track who hasn't been on the lower levels yet. So he's seen emptiness, right? He hasn't seen emptiness. Hasn't been on a lower track, didn't see emptiness on a Hinayana track, hasn't gotten to second path yet where he has intellectual understanding of emptiness. So he understands emptiness? Money. Okay, you guys ready? You go. Well, chance of money, Papa. So it's not on my own track either. Chance of money, Papa. Is it on my own track or no? Yeah, it's on my own track. He is, I said, he's on my own track. Well, it's like for the guy on my own track who hasn't got to the second path yet. He's a bodhisattva, and he hasn't got the least idea of emptiness. Seriously. Well, not much, okay?
Not much.
Not much, okay. So, okay, not much. So what I'm saying is that you can have bodhisattva without understanding emptiness. That's the point. You can have ultimate compassion, and you haven't seen emptiness yet. You don't even understand it much yet intellectually very well. You can have that. So you can be a bodhisattva without perceiving emptiness, and you can perceive emptiness without being a bodhisattva, right? So, Sangye, Sada, so that Buddha is a liar. If you think you freed somebody, okay, alright? If you're seeing them as self-existent, if you don't have bodhicitta number two about them, which understands their emptiness while you're trying to save them, okay? Then don't call yourself in the bodhisattva. Is that technically correct?
No.
No, it's not technically correct. Okay? You didn't read the first reading. He said, Chanju Samba Samba Chibo. What's that? Bodhisattvas who are big shots. Okay? What's that mean? They've seen emptiness. Okay? This whole sutra is being addressed to a gang of bodhisattva, big shots, mahasattvas. Okay? And the implication is they've seen emptiness, they understand emptiness. So he's saying, I'm not going to call you guys bodhisattvas if you guys think you're saving living beings. Okay? And you don't understand their emptiness while you're saving them. Okay? The implication is, you know, it's not enough to be a nice guy. You want to be a tantric deity? You want to turn into Manjushri? You want to turn other people onto it? You've got to understand emptiness. Or don't call yourself no bodhisattva. Okay? That's what he's saying. Technically it's not correct. But if you want to get there in one lifetime, you better figure it out. Okay? Now you've got to figure out emptiness and you cannot reach a tantric enlightenment. Okay? You've got to figure it out. Okay. To figure it out. Okay? Bodhisattva behavior has to be accompanied by understanding emptiness. For it to become perfection of wisdom and for you to pull it off in this lifetime, you've got to have compassion and an understanding of emptiness, okay? and you ought to be keeping your book and have an understanding of emptiness. What is about on time? 6:15. Take a break. We'll come back at 6:30. Warm up. Shake your hands. And then I'll show you how to do the book, okay? And then we'll wrap up, okay? If you want to come up and ask a question or just crash, don't be shy, okay? Last chance in 3.5 years or something. Like that.
Sorry.
Yeah, is that okay?
6:05 right now.
Oh, I'm sorry. 10-15 minutes from now.
Okay.
10 minutes from now. Come.
Yeah, you said that.
A lot of stuff to cover. I just want to, you know, in the text it says, I will bring all living beings to nirvana. Of course it means nirvana and enlightenment. Is there a difference between nirvana and enlightenment? I'm just going to touch on it very briefly, because some people don't... I know it's sometimes confusing between the two. Okay, nirvana is when you get rid of all your bad thoughts forever because you saw emptiness directly. Okay, due to what you learned when you saw emptiness directly. Perkela, Shati Mereta. In Tibetan, okay? The definition of nirvana is means you got rid of all your bad thoughts because of what you understood when you saw emptiness directly. Okay? What's the implication? You can't get rid of your bad thoughts unless you see emptiness directly. Okay? It's part of the definition of nirvana. Okay? That's nirvana. Nirvana. Now, so somebody in this room achieved nirvana tonight, would they look any different? Well, it probably wouldn't scour, you know, probably wouldn't be me. They wouldn't look worried or anything. You see, I mean, no anxiety, no jealousy, no anger. I mean, they probably have a palmless face or something. But they wouldn't be gone or anything like that. That's a wrong idea about nirvana. That's a lower school thought about nirvana, that you disappear or something like that. It just means you cleaned out your mind, okay? Enlightenment is totally different. You reach a body of light, permanent, everlasting bliss, and omniscient mind and total compassion. Okay, that's a whole different story. Okay? That's a whole different story. Okay, that's the difference between nirvana and enlightenment. Okay? Nirvana's easier. Okay? But you can't pull that off even if you don't have, if you don't understand emptiness. Now, I think this book is dangerous because the Buddha goes around saying weird stuff like, after you get all these people enlightened, there won't be anybody that got enlightened. And then, to me, that kind of statement is dangerous because then you get, you know, people saying, well, then I'll just take drugs and I won't see anybody and I'll get enlightened. Or something like that, you know, there's a lot of strange ideas can come up if you say, oh, you know, when you enlighten everybody, nobody's there. You know, and then people try to understand emptiness and they spare people, you know, like, is Ben there? No, you know, oh, as far as emptiness, you know, something like that. Okay, you gotta understand what emptiness is, okay? Emptiness is the absence of something. That's all. It should have been called absence or something like that, okay? It just means that something's not there. Okay, I'll give you an example. The people who studied with me before, they know. Is there a 240-foot purple elephant rampaging through this room right now, smashing people? Is there? No. So the emptiness of a 240-foot purple elephant, does it exist in this room? Yes. Okay, the absence of that exists here. You see what I mean? The fact that there is no such elephant here does exist here. And that's the emptiness in this room of a two-headed, 40-foot purple elephant. And by the way, could those things exist in other places? Now I mean like normal realm, okay? Not really. No, okay? I mean, normally they don't exist, okay? That's the whole point. Get this, all of your suffering, the very fact that you're getting old, the fact that life is boring, etc., all of that is caused because you believe in something that doesn't exist, never existed, never could exist, and because you believe in it, you're going to die. Okay? That's the trick about emptiness. Emptiness means emptiness is something that was never there in the first place and couldn't be there because it doesn't exist at all. It's the same as a 40-foot, 300 purple elephant, okay? You, ignorance means that you're holding on to the existence of something which causes you all your suffering, and the irony, or the thing that is so bad, is that it never existed anyway. You know, all your jealousy, anger, desire, etc. is caused by holding on to something that never existed in the first place. You know, and that's killing you. By the way, another tantric secret, okay? Mental afflictions. Every time you get a little angry, every time you're a little irritated at someone, every time you're a little jealous of somebody, screws up your channels. You think those chakras are these cute little flower petal things in your belly button or something? Forget it. These are knots in your spiritual plumbing. Okay? Every time you have a mental affliction, it chokes. Those are choke points. Those are death points. Those are what make you mortal. You know? Every time you have a bad thought, it chokes those points. And you get a little closer to dying. A wrinkle shows up, a hair falls out and turns white, red, or gray. Okay, those are all caused by the mental afflictions. If you didn't have them, your body wouldn't get old. Check it out. That's something. You see, that's the metallic part. That, you know, the planning thing about juggling. You get to later, okay? Mahamudra, huh? Okay, that comes later, okay? But you gotta understand it. You gotta get rid of mental afflictions and then you're halfway there, you see what I mean? And you can't do it unless you understand emptiness. And you can't understand emptiness if you don't know gotcha, okay? Here's gotcha. Oops. That's a good, right? I got it. Gotcha. G-A-K-C-H-A. Let's change that to J-A. Okay? Sorry. Say gotcha. Gotcha. You gotta get this. People are dying. The very state of death itself is caused by not understanding emptiness. If you understood it, you could solve that problem. Okay? Much less all the people you don't like. Okay? They just go away. I'm talking death itself. You know, people think Buddhism's goal is to meditate nice, to walk around with a big smile as you get old and die. You know, it's not like that. And it's not even to be a Buddhist. You see, a lot of people think Buddhism is to be a Buddhist. It's not that. It's not to go around and know all your prayers and be able to recite anything in Tibetan. And it's not it. It's to overcome the four sufferings of which death is the worst one. You know, that's no Buddhist deal. The covenant of Lord Buddha, you know, you don't have to die. You don't have to get old. You can fix that. It's not about watching your breath or watching your thoughts or something like that. You can fix the most fundamental problem of existence, which is aging, dying itself. Much less your business problems, which will also go away. Okay? Seriously. There's a book about it coming out. Double day. Okay? You can fix everything up to death. That's the point. You gotta understand emptiness, okay? Because you can't get rid of those choke points if you don't understand emptiness, okay? Gotcha means the thing which emptiness is empty of. The thing that's not there when you talk about emptiness, okay? It's the 200 40-foot purple elephant. Now, of course, it's not that, but that's an example. The gotcha is the thing that emptiness is empty of. The gotcha is a thing that's not there The gotcha is the thing that you hold on to it, and it causes you all your trouble.
Okay.
Because you think it's there.
Okay.
Now you get into this thing, you know, like, what is gotcha?
Okay.
And here you get all this confusing stuff. I went through it for 20 years, I know. You go ask 30 lamas what gotcha is, and you get this long explanations, and by the end, your head is like, woo, 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 you know? And they're like, can you just explain to me in single English, you know? What am I doing wrong with this stupid pen? Grandma said I had to use this one. It's kind of a weird pen, but okay. You know, what am I doing wrong? You know, what is it I'm doing wrong about this, you know? You know, Jessima. You know, what am I doing wrong about this pen? It's going to kill me. You know, going to screw up my psychic channels and my winds, you know, and make me die. You know, what am I doing wrong? Can you just tell me, what's the gotcha? You know, what is it about this pen that you say doesn't exist?
Okay.
I'm going to give a basic explanation, but then we're going to take about the whole rest of the class to do that, the whole rest of the course to figure it out. And it goes, did you figure that out, Latifa, yet? I'll ask you again, okay? If you have a bicycle wheel, is it a bicycle? No. Okay, so the thing is not its parts, okay? If you have an apple, is it a bicycle? No. And the thing is not other than its parts. If you have all the parts of a bicycle together and you put them together in the store and it's ready to ride, is that a bicycle? Be careful. She said, no, come on. You little Buddhas are a problem. You know, I once tried to trick this girl, she was 6 years old, into saying, yes, it is. No, it's not a bicycle, you know? Of course it's a bicycle. She said, she looked up to me and she said, we just got out of Madhyamika class. I said, Janice Baden, she's now a really good student, she's 30-something years old. I said, Janice, you know, is the bicycle, it's wheel? She says, no. I said, is the bicycle an apple? She said, no. I said, is the bicycle everything put together? And she said, yes. And it is, you know, okay. So why didn't the guy even say it's not? You see what I mean? He said, it's not its parts, it's not something other than its parts, and it's not all its parts together. It's not its parts one by one. Like, the bicycle's not the wheel, okay? I'm not my arm, okay? And I'm not a turtle, okay? I'm not something other than my parts. I'm not something other than my parts. But that's easy. Now how about the choice number four is the hard one. Am I all my parts together? That's the big question. Am I all my parts together? Question. Looks like you are, you know. You say, I want to sell you a bicycle. You can pay $50 put together, or I'll give it to you for $10 if you put it together. And the guy gives you all the parts, and you put it together, is it a bicycle or what? Yeah, you can ride it. What? You can ride it. Right. So is it a bicycle? The guardian says no. Now this is where I think all the Tibetan Lama explanations, they just break down. You know, they're like, you're waiting for the punchline, you know? Why is it not a bicycle? And then they go on. And you have to say it wasn't any of the above, or none of the above, or all of the above. And you're like, wait a minute, what about the all the parts thing? Wow. And then they say, oh, because, you know, you're still confused, okay? It's very simple, all right? What is this thing? A pen, okay? And if a dog came in here, okay? I'm sorry to use the same example, but in Mongolia, they're going to make my statue with a pen, right? So I have to use that. So if a dog comes in here and walks up to the front, and I go, buggy, 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 and I go like that, especially if I wipe some meat juice on it or something, okay? And it's a puppy, and this one's not so hard. They would like to chew on it. So in their mind, they see it as something to chew on, okay? They don't see it as a pen. In fact, they can't see it as a pen. The fact that they can't see it as a pen is why they're a dog, okay? They can't see it as a pen, okay? Something in their mind looks at these same parts. How many parts? All the parts. and doesn't think of them as a plant. Thinks of it as something to chew. Therefore, all the parts together are not the bicycle. Until what? Until some kid comes up and thinks of it as a bicycle. You see what I mean? That's the missing part. That's the final part. Is to see it as a bicycle. You see what I mean? It's not a bicycle if you put all the parts together. You bring an Eskimo from the 12th century into the bicycle showroom and you say, and they don't get on it right away, you know? Because they don't think of it as a bicycle. You see what I mean? There's got to be something in your mind that makes you think of all of the parts together as a pen before there's a pen. Why? Because I can have all those same parts together and wave it in front of some puppy and he's got to chew on it. Okay? It's not a pen from its own side. That's all. All the parts together, even though it has all the parts together, I mean, it's easy to say the top's not the pen. It's easy to say a banana's not the pen. But it's a little bit harder to say, guess what? All the parts of the pen together are not a pen. Why? Because you didn't think of it as a pen yet. Okay? When you think of it as a pen, then it's a pen. Nagarjuna is talking about all the parts together before you thought of it as a pen. Forget this label imputation crap. Okay? Think of it as a pen. Okay? All the parts together are not a pen until your mind says, pen. That's all. They say, mingam de topatam. Okay? Names and thoughts, names and words, it just means thoughts. Okay? Your mind organizes all those colors and all those shapes into a thing called pen. Okay? How come the dog can't do it? How come the dog doesn't run up here and write a letter to his dog girlfriend? Why? He doesn't see it as a pen. Why? He's stupid. No, it's not like that. This is the big marriage, okay? There was this back in 0 BC, there was a big marriage between Mr. Karma and Mrs. Emptiness, Miss Emptiness, okay? May Emptiness, okay? There was a big marriage between Karma and Emptiness. Like, the Buddha spent 25 years explaining good deeds, karma, and 25 years explaining emptiness. Do you think there's a connection? You see what I mean? And people just, they never talk about it. It frustrates me a lot, you know? Your karma forces you to see it as a pen. The parts are not the pen until your past karma comes up in your conscious mind and forces you to see it as a pen. That's all. That's the big connection between karma and emptiness, okay? This is an empty what? It's a purple, green, flashy, gold cylinder. I wish you could pick the easier color. Okay? And then when you think of it as a pen, it's a pen for you. Okay? And if you think of it as something to chew on, it really is something to chew on for you. Okay? But what is it by itself? It's just a fancy cylinder. Okay? That's all. So what's the gacha? What's not here? A pen that could exist from its own side without your karma making you see it as a pen. That's a gacha that never existed. That's not here, it's not anywhere. Never was, never will be here. Could never be here. Okay? There's no pen in my hand. Give this to it. Okay? There's no pen in my hand. Okay? There's a fancy green cylinder. Now, if you're a human and you have the karma to see it as a pen, it's a pen for you, okay? But it's not a pen by itself, or else the dog will come up and try to... It's not a pen by itself. Okay, from its own side, it's not a pen. That's all. You know, now you can throw out all those weird explanations you ever heard. Just junk it, okay? That's all you need, okay? But is it its top? No, stupid. You need the bottom to write with. Is it a banana? No, there's not a connection with it. Is it all its parts together? No, not until you think of it as a pen and use it as a pen because you have the karma to see it as a pen. That's all. Okay, that's all. Is it none of the above? No, because it's number 3 if you think about it. Forget it. Okay. That's all. And all that mystery stuff is just people didn't understand it, okay? Now there's this big marriage between, you know, Buddha teaching 50,000 pages on morality and 50,000 pages on emptiness. Because it's your morality that makes you see a pen. Okay? It's your past karma that makes you see a pen. And there's no pen there until your karma forces you to see a pen. Okay? So now I'll describe the gacha to me one more time. It's slippery. Gachas are greased pigs. Okay? Just the moment you think you got it, it slips away again. Okay? I'll describe to you the pen that doesn't exist. And emptiness is the lack of that. Emptiness is the fact that there's no such thing. Okay? Got it? Ready? A pen which would be a pen from its own side. Never existed, couldn't exist, will not exist. Okay? Until you think of it as a pen, it's just a fancy bunch of colors. Prove it. Dog walks in here, sees something else. Okay? What's it got to do with my life? I just want to be happy. I'd like to get over jealousy, you know? I'd like to stop being angry at people. I'd like to be happy, you know? It's a beautiful explanation you're giving. I'm glad we understand the Gajima now. What's it got to do with me, you know? Obviously, this cylinder and this cylinder are the same, okay? This one and this one are the same, okay? You have a karma in your mind to see a pen, you'll see a pen. You have a karma in your mind to see a bone or something to chew on, you'll see something to chew on. You have a karma in your mind to see what is flesh, blood, bone, you'll die. You have a karma to see light, holy light, Manjushri's arm, you'll be a tantric deity. Just fix your karma. How? Do your book. Get it? Okay? That's all. Keep your vows. Okay? It's not much of keep your vows because you're going to be a nice person or a nice monk or nun or something like that. Forget it. Keep your vows because you're going to change your karma. And it's going to make you see the same cylinder as something else. Why? Because it's empty. It's not an ugly, wrinkled, freckly arm from its own side. Okay? It's because I'm being forced by my lousy karma to see you as this wrinkly hand. Okay? And if I had better karma in my mind, I'd be seeing something totally different. Okay? Does it make sense for the dog to say pens don't exist? You know, the dogs had a meeting back in the back there and came up and said, stop talking about that as a pen. Everybody knows it's something to chew on. You know. No, and if they chew on your pen, you get mad too, right? And you're forcing your new reality on them. Don't chew on a pen, stupid. Hey, stupid, it's not a pen, it's something to chew on. Who's right? They're both valid. We call sama, pramana, valid perception. They're both right. But what is it really? A cylinder. Okay? A green cylinder. That's all. That's emptiness. That's Nagarjuna. That's Majjhimika. You don't need all that other stuff. Okay? Really, that's all it is. By itself, it's just a fancy cylinder. Okay? What's the gacha? A pen that existed without me around to make it a pen. A true thing that existed without dogs around to make it. This ain't anything by itself. That's all. By itself, it's not a pen. By itself, it's not something that you own. If you think it's a pen by itself, you're holding on to something that doesn't exist. And that's going to cause you a problem. Why? Because then you'll fight with somebody about it. Okay? Then you'll fight with somebody. That's a pen. That's not a true pen. Give me my pen. Stop chewing on your pen. You see what I mean? That's the rule of our evil. Okay? Really, we'll talk more about it. Your mental afflictions feed on the fact that you don't understand this thing. They cannot live without that misunderstanding. You stop that misunderstanding, you kill your mental afflictions. Okay? It's very interesting. We'll talk more about that, okay? But you gotta understand the gacha. I think we're pretty close to... What time is it? You gotta be careful. Oh, I still have a quarter. Okay. Let me make sure I did everything in the homework. Oh, here's a fancy one. That's the last question. Tell me about the doctor and say it's in a manier. I hereby exempt you from the Tibetan. It's too long. Okay. Anybody who wants it, Christopher, I'll give it to you afterwards. Okay. Tell me about the doctor and say it's in a manier. It just means this process of looking for the pen in three places, okay? I'll give you the three choices, okay?
Take my put this over here. Thanks.
Yeah. Is the pen any one of its parts? And you say, no, I mean, a bicycle is not a wheel, right? You can't ride, well, maybe you could, but let's say the seat, okay? You can't ride the seat to town, okay? The seat of the bicycle is not the bicycle, okay? Is something unrelated to the pen a pen? Example? Kela. Kela. Banana. Answer? Easy. Okay. Are all of the parts of the pen together a pen? Be careful. I would say no, not from its own side. How's that? And that's what Arya Nagarjuna says in the small print. Now we'll do an actual emptiness meditation, okay? Ready? Is that the pen? No. Okay, you passed number one. Number two. Anybody got a banana? No. Okay, anyway. Is that the pen? Is the microphone the pen? No. Okay. Are all the pieces... We got too many pens. Are all the parts of this thing together a pen? Not from its own side. You have to say not from its own side. Okay? Not from its own side. That's all. You thereby establish emptiness. Okay? Then you find emptiness. You see what I mean? That's how you find emptiness. You eliminate everything else. And then you find emptiness. Okay? That's all. You eliminate everything else. Okay? Think of this thing the way a dog thinks of it and tell me what it is. Is your mouth watering? No way. You see? By the way, it's an interesting thing. You have the karma to be able to imagine how a dog sees it. You see? But you don't actually have the karma of a dog. You see? You have the karma to be able to imagine how a dog sees it, but you don't have the karma of a dog. That's a different kind of karma. That karma is forcing him to see it as something to chew on. His mouth waters uncontrollably. He starts wagging his tail. You see what I mean? It's a different karma. You have the karma to be able to imagine how the dog sees it. The dog doesn't have a choice. His karma is forcing him to see it as something to chew on. And get this, that's what makes him a dog. You see what I mean? That's why he's a dog. So don't go around saying he sees it as something to chew on because he's a dog. What you're supposed to say. He sees it as something to chew on and therefore he's a dog. Okay? Why are we making this difference? Get it? It's not that he's a dog. I'm sorry. It's not that he sees it as something to chew on because he's a dog. If you see it as something to chew on, you are a dog. Then rebirth becomes a frighteningly real possibility. Okay? It's not that there's like dog bodies. I told you before, right? It's not like there's these empty dog body factories in, I don't know,
Balrampur or something, okay? And they're making empty dog bottles. And then there's a facility over in Uttar Pradesh with big nets. And when people die, they catch the spirits and boom them and stuff them into the dogs and zip it shut. And no, when I say rebirth, you think like that. You really do think like that. I know, because I grew up thinking like that. Rebirth, you know, reincarnation. You call it reincarnation, re-meeting. Refreshing. You see what I mean? You think there's a spirit wandering around and somebody stuffs it into this dog and then the dog wakes up and, you know, and you think that's what the word reincarnation means in English, you know? Re-meet something. You know, it's not like that. You have karmas in your mind that are making you see this as a pen. They will wear out. They are a kind of energy. They always wear out. You have the karma to see this as a living arm. It will wear out. The karma will wear out. And then older karmas will come up to the conscious mind. You have this huge karmic pocket. And then these other karmas will come up to the mind. And you'll see it as a paw. And then you is a dog. You see? There's no like dog's factory and they're stuffing minds into them or something like that. You have a few karmas left in your mind to see this as a human arm, and you're using them up fast, and they wear out fast. And when you wear them out, we'll call you dead. Really. And then 2 minutes later, some older karmas will reassert themselves, and God knows what you'll see. You see what I mean? There's no arm. Get used to it. There's no arm. It's emptiness of the arm. You have an emptiness of your arm. Your arm is just a cylinder. It's a cylinder. And your karma is making you see it as a human arm, and that karma, you're using it up every moment you see it as a human arm. Being alive is expensive. You know, you're using up the credit card fast. You have a karma credit card, and you're using it up, and you can't see it as a human arm very long. Okay, you're wearing it out as we speak, you're using it up, you know. Then you've got all these worst karmas waiting in line underneath that karma, okay? And then that one will go, and then you'll see it as something else, okay? You don't have to die and go be born in some dog's stomach or something like that. Forget that. The emptiness of your arm means that you could become a dog. It also means that you could reach tantric enlightenment. You've got to understand emptiness to pull it off. You see? You got to understand the emptiness of your arm to become a tantric deity in this lifetime. If you get turned on to emptiness, then you don't know how, you know, you're like, wow, that means I could become like Tara, you know? I said, yeah, you know. I had a student, he said, that means I could become like Buddha. I said, yeah. He says, could we do it without the bump and the lungs? No, the way karma works and the way tantric stuff works is that when you become a tantric deity, it will be the most beautiful thing you can imagine. You see what I mean? Everything you always wanted to be. Like the most exquisite, beautiful thing and more that you can imagine. You don't have to look Mongolian or Indian or Tibetan or Chinese or Japanese or, you know, whatever seeds you have in your own mind at that moment will assert themselves. By the way, it happens slowly, okay? Like you start having intimations of it, and then it gets stronger and stronger, and then one morning you just wake up and, you know, and you look like that. You know, the most beautiful thing you can imagine in your own mind is exactly the way you will look, you know? It's funny, people say, the guy's so weird, he painted Tara like a Western lady, you know? And I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot, Tara can't do Western ladies. You know, her job is to do whatever you like. You know, her job is to emanate to whatever looks good to you, you know. So she's going to do that. I was in the Hermitage in Russia, where Cadillac, that's where we found the diamond cutter next door. And they took me to this wall, and they said, look at this painting from Central Asia. And we took it from a cave. They brought the whole side of the cave and they glued it to the wall, you know. And there's this guy with all this silk on and jewels on, and his face looks like, you know, what's that guy? The British actor. A little like Winston Churchill, or who's that guy, the British actor famous nowadays? Hugh Grant. okay, a handsome guy, you know, and I'm like, who's that? And they said, Budget Party. And I said, we're putting it on, you know. We should get them. And they said, no, check it out, Misha. You know, and they know Sanskrit, you know, and this is like much older than Tibetan Buddhism, long before Tibetan Buddhism. And here's this wall painting of Vajrapani, and he looks like, you know, Hugh Grant. you can't think like that. Don't think like that. You know, you have seeds in your mind. Whatever's beautiful in your culture, in your mind, that's what you will be. Because you're empty. See what I mean? Now, if you were around saying that you want to help people who are not empty, could you pull this off? Could you think like this? No. So we aren't going to call you a bodhisattva if you think like that. That's the point of tonight's class. That's all. That's the last sentence in the meeting for tonight. You know, Lord Buddha says, Subhuti, what are you going to do now? He says, I've got to serve our living beings. And he says, so will there come a time when you save them all? He said, yes. And he said, well, do you realize there won't be anybody when you save them all who got saved? And he says, what are you talking about? He says, Subhuti, anything like that, you're no bodhisattva. You're not going to make it. You're just not going to make it. You got to realize they're empty. Okay? There is no flesh-colored, wrinkly, freckle-covered, kind of scraggly-haired arm there. Okay? It's just a cylinder. And my particular karma is forcing me to see it as an arm. Does that mean if I take a hammer and hit it, it's not going to break? No, because my particular karma will force me to see a broken, scraggly-haired, wrinkled arm. Okay? Your karma is forcing you to see that. Don't think it's not real. I mean, it's an illusion in the sense that it's not what you thought it was. You're making it with your karma's making you see it that way. By the way, do you have a choice about the matter? Not now. Okay? Not now. No, not at 7 o'clock on Tuesday, Wednesday, I forget what day it is, okay? You don't have a choice right now. But you can set up tomorrow's arm, you see what I mean? Or 6 months from now, how? Keep your book. Keep your vows. That's what the vows are for. Forget, don't think of vows as this, like, pain in the ass thing. Oh, vows, you know. This is your ticket to paradise, you know. It's just a list of the most powerful karmas you can collect. Lord Buddha said there's 84,000 good karmas you can do. Now here's 64 to concentrate on. If you want to see this skinny thing as Manjushri's golden arm, you know, concentrate on these 64. So what, at the end of the day you're going to look at a few of them? Is that going to change things? You got to do it all throughout the day. That's why it's a tantric initiation requirement to do this, okay? And not to do it for 15 minutes in the morning and 15 minutes at night. Okay, that's a corruption. It's not going to change it, okay? So you got to keep your book, okay? So, we have 5 minutes left, right? Okay. I'll tell you, I'll give you a real quick book to do for tonight, and then tomorrow, check your six perfections throughout the day. I suggest from like 8 a.m., 10:30, noon. This is just a simplified form. 2:30, 5, 7:30. This is giving, ethical living. I like to call this the art of not getting angry. And then enjoy doing good things. Forget effort, it sounds like sweat, you know. What's the other translation they use? It's so funny. Meditation. And wisdom. Okay, very quick, because we got to go home on time. At 8 o'clock in the morning, open up your little book, put a plus, put a minus, and put a to-do. Just do it for 5 days, okay? Humor me. You can throw it out as soon as I leave. Okay? Forgiving, we want to know some concrete, tiny, little, charitable thing you did to help somebody else in the last 24 hours. Okay? We don't want some, you know, holy act, divine, you know, world-changing thing. Okay? What's one small act of giving that you did in the last 24 hours? I personally shared part of my Kit Kat. And don't laugh. It has to be specific. Okay? A lot of people can write better ones, but we got Kit Kats. You know. Okay? You know, you really wanted the other half of the Kit Kat, and I'm not kidding, you know? And I'm like, I should share it, but I did have a long car ride and everything. Okay, share it, you know? And that kind of attention to your behavior is what gets you enlightened, okay? It's the little things. It's not the, oh, I gave away $1 million to Sarah J and built a new temple today. We don't have that opportunity all the time, okay? It's the little things that you did from moment to moment that are truly charitable, okay? Then what's a negative? Forgot to share the Coke during break. I mean, I stopped there and drank it in front of some poor student who was asking me a question, okay? What's a to-do? Tomorrow during the break, you guys can check it, okay? In break, share, okay? And this kind of attention to your behavior is how you become a bodhisattva. It's not this, you know, huge things. You don't have the opportunity. If you get a chance to push an old lady out of the way of a rickshaw driver, do it. You know, then you can write that in your book. But in the meantime, something specific about your moment-to-moment, hour-to-hour behavior. And that's how you become a bodhisattva. And that's how you keep your vows, okay? So do this for the next 5 days, okay? Do you guys know Mazal? Mazal in the diamond business is used all over the world, in Russia, in Burma, in China, in Japan, in South Africa, in Brazil. They say, Mazal Bracha. It means, use it in good health. It means I swear to the deal. It's a diamond dealer thing. Once you say mazal, you made the deal. There's no papers, there's no contracts, there's no writing, there's no lawyers. Mazal means I give my sacred word of honor. And we don't have to. I'll remember. Nobody writes it down. Mazal ubarcha. So do I have mazal? 5 days. Okay. All right. It's going to get a little more complicated, but that's okay. That's how we change the terms after the mazal. Okay, so those 6 things tomorrow, okay? And meditate 2 in the morning, okay?
Yes.
About the meditation assignment for reading what I... It says, Yenin Shigema, the source of all my good or something. Don't worry about it. Visualize your lineage lamas and ask them for help to understand emptiness, okay? In the monasteries, before we study emptiness, it's in the 13th year of the studies. You actually go to some cave and meditate for a month or 2 months, and you just pray to Jetsun Kapa or to the lamas to give you power to learn to study emptiness. So tonight, for your meditation tomorrow, you know, visualize Jetsun Kapa or Lama Sopa or His Holiness or some holy lama and ask them for help. And don't think it's a silly practice. Jetsun Kapa himself spent years doing this practice, you know. And then finally this guy steps out of his visualization, you know, and says, can I help you? You know. No, of course, Manjushri. 1580, his Lama Umapa was the translator. Like, he'd give Umapa a question, Umapa would ask Manjushri, and then finally he saw it, okay? Face to face, okay? But you gotta do it, pretend for a while. It's called Bhakti Nandra, pretend yoga, okay? All right, here we go. Please go home safely in groups, you know. Don't go singly, okay? Take some big guys. All right.
Oh, Gawadi Kiawa. Sakshin Samam Yashin Chakrin Pache Makya Panam Kye Gyochik Kye Panyam Pame Payangam Ne Gandhu Bawashok Gangri Rave Kare Jinkam Dirpendam Dewa Jungle, Chen Rosig, Wanden, Zungatso, Ishapo, Sito, Barudem, Gyoshi, Osaji, Poki, Jukshi. Yami